Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday, the 14th of May. A warm welcome to DW's Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Lovely to have you on board. We are also streaming live on Facebook, DW Africa. If you are already there, give us a like. Coming up,
the World Health Organization tightens up its grip on trying to contain the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We are now bringing mobile laboratory units. We are fielding epidemiologists and other experts to work with the national health authorities and other partners to be able to set up treatment centers.
The trial on alleged corruption involving two giant oil companies in Nigeria postponed once again in Italy. But what does this case mean to Nigerians?
This case provides hope for the people of Nigeria who've lost out an enormous amount to corruption. Just from this one deal alone, the $1.1 billion that was diverted away from the Nigerian people is more than last year's health budget.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, here is a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Israeli troops have shot and killed at least 43 Palestinians and wounded hundreds along the Gaza border today. Palestinians were protesting the move of the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and the 70th anniversary of the founding of Israel being celebrated this Monday. According to DW correspondent Maya Schweider in Jerusalem,
the numbers of dead and wounded that we see is normally something an average sort of violent protest in this region. Those are numbers that you see sort of at the end of the day when things are over. And it's just the middle of the afternoon. People are really expecting things to unfortunately get much, much worse.
The German government has expressed concern over recent developments in the Middle East. The German foreign ministry called for restraint on both sides in the latest confrontation between Israelis and Palestinians. A spokesperson said the move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem should not be an excuse for violence. In Iraq, an alliance headed by nationalist cleric Muqtada Sadr and the rival bloc of pro-Iranian former fighters appeared to surge Monday in surprise preliminary results from Iraq's first election since the defeat of the Islamic State group. The outcome would throw open the race to become the next prime minister. Incumbent Haider al-Abadi, who is internationally favoured, said he would accept any election results. In Indonesia, a family of Islamist militants carried an 8-year-old child into a suicide bomb attack against police in Surabaya on Monday, a day after another militant family killed 13 people in suicide attacks on three churches in the same city. The police said the child had survived the explosion. Four officers and six civilians were wounded in the latest attack. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A spokesman for the World Health Organization, WHO, announced on Monday that Ebola vaccines are being shipped to the Democratic Republic of Congo in an effort to stem the outbreak in the Central African country. According to the agency, the virus has killed 19 people since April. WHO spokesman Tariq Yazarevich told DW that the main targets of vaccination are the people in close contact with the patients, but the agency is also acting to help prevent Ebola from spreading.
We work closely with neighboring countries. We are in contact with them. They are obviously closely monitoring the situation. We are looking into their preparedness level, and we are helping them in the area that they need, if they feel they need some assistance when it comes to preparedness.
The European Union's Council of Ministers has announced training assistance for the G5 Sahel joint force of 5,000 soldiers from Burkina Faso, Mali, Mauritania, Niger and Chad. The countries joined forces to increase security in the region beset by terrorist attacks and stop human trafficking of African migrants trying to reach Europe. The EU's own military mission in Mali, which was launched in 2013 after a military coup destabilized the region and allowed Islamists and other rebel groups to temporarily control the north of the country, will be endowed with a further €60 million in the next 2 years. A device discovered in a mosque near the South African port city of Durban has been confirmed as explosive, police said on Monday. The device was found on Sunday, 3 days after the attack at the mosque by three men armed with guns and knives. One person was killed after his throat was slit and two others were injured. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Krippel.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link, a program that brings you news and stories from around the continent and Africa at large. My name is Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. We are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Share and leave us your comments on the stories that we will be covering.
Now, it's 2 weeks since the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo was confirmed. Over the weekend, the country's health ministry and UN started deploying specialists in the effort to prevent the spread of the virus. Some 30 people are suspected to be infected. Tariq Yasaravik, who is the spokesperson of the World Health Organization, has been telling me what the situation looks like at the moment.
We are now bringing mobile laboratory units. We are fielding epidemiologists and other experts to work with the national health authorities and other partners to be able to set up treatment centers, to have a contact tracing program, to have a safe burials, to work with the community. And also we are preparing for vaccination.
Now, as of last week, the World Health Organization was waiting for approval from DRC's health ministry to okay use of Marek, which is a trial vaccine. How far have you gone with this?
There are already some steps that have been taken. There are still few steps to be made. At the same time, we have to work on logistics because this is a very complex operation. Just to give you a sense, Ebola vaccine has to be kept at between minus 60 and minus 80 degrees Celsius to be good to use. So we are working on parallel tracks on several fronts, trying to get this vaccination ongoing. This would not be general vaccination for everyone. It would be a targeted vaccination for people who are identified as possible contacts of people who have been infected. It's so-called ring vaccination.
In what measures have been put in place to avoid the spread of the virus to the neighboring countries?
Well, we work closely with neighboring countries. We are in contact with them. They are obviously closely monitoring the situation. We are looking into their preparedness level, and we are helping them in the area that they need if they feel they need some assistance when it comes to preparedness.
Now, following the death of this nurse, are we right to say that the epidemic has not yet been contained?
It is difficult to predict how the outbreak will go. So at this stage, we are still fielding all the necessary experts and material to try to get full epidemiological picture. So we are really in a response mode, and we hope that what we are doing right now will help contain the outbreak, but it's difficult to give any prediction. And we are preparing for all scenarios, including a worst-case scenario.
WHO spokesperson Tariq Yasaravik explaining what it looks like and what efforts the organization is undertaking. Now, as we just news coming in now is that actually the Congolese government has okayed the use of a trial vaccine, and we can only wish them the best of luck.
Yes, indeed, Jane. Moving on, the U.S. has officially opened its embassy in Jerusalem, a move celebrated by Israelis and condemned by Palestinians. Protests on the Gaza border have turned violent, with at least 40 people killed by Israeli troops. Amid the clashes, top U.S. aides, including President Donald Trump's daughter and her husband, attended the embassy opening ceremony in Jerusalem.
President Trump's decision last year to recognize the city as Israel's capital broke with decades of U.S. neutrality on the issue and put it at odds with most of the international community. The move is a major win for Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Speaking at the opening ceremony, he said it was a great day for Israel.
My friends, this is a great day for Israel. It's a great day for America. It's a great day for our fantastic partnership, but I believe it's also a great day for peace. God bless the United States of America, and God bless Jerusalem, the eternal, undivided capital of Israel. Baruch Ata Adonai,
Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu there speaking during the opening ceremony of Jerusalem as the capital.
Let's now go back to Africa and the trial to determine alleged corruption involving Shell and Eni oil companies in Nigeria has been postponed once again until the 20th of next month after a brief procedural hearing in Milan, Italy today. At the next hearing, the court said it would assess requests from third parties, including a series of international non-profit organizations, to join the case. Those wishing to be involved include a number of international non-profit organizations. Eddie Maika Jr. with the details.
The Milan Public Prosecutor's Office accuses the Italian oil firm Eni and the British-Dutch oil company Shell of having paid millions of dollars in bribes in order to acquire a lucrative oil exploration and drilling license in Nigeria. 15 defendants are facing trial. Most of them are former employees of the two companies. Former Nigeria oil minister Dan Etete will also be tried. Milan is not the only place where court proceedings are taking place. The second trial for the oil giants is the Federal Court of Justice in Nigeria's commercial capital, Lagos, where rights group Human and Environmental Development Agenda, HEDA, is challenging the oil companies. HEDA wants Shell and Eni to lose their licenses for oil production in Nigeria, Africa's largest crude oil producer, as HEDA's spokesperson, Lanre Suraju, explains.
Our case is actually going to the root of the oil block. And what we're saying is that under the law and in the face of the law, all the strategic contracts signed is completely illegal.
The agreement allegedly saw Nigeria's former president Goodluck Jonathan and his oil minister Etete pocket bribes, according to corruption watchdog Global Witness. Global Witness said a deal resulted in $1.1 billion being paid into an account in London opened by Nigerian government officials that went directly to Etete. The Nigerian government received only $210 million. For Barnaby Pace, head of investigations at the watchdog, the Milan trial is unprecedented.
No company the size of Shell has ever stood trial for a corruption case, and no sitting CEO of an oil major like Eni's current CEO has also gone to trial for corruption. This case provides hope for the people of Nigeria who've lost out an enormous amount to corruption. Just from this one deal alone, the $1.1 billion that was diverted away from the Nigerian people is more than last year's health budget. In a country where 1 in 10 children don't live to see their fifth birthday.
Both companies, Eni and Shell, have denied paying bribes. The trial had originally been set to start in a Milan court in March, but was transferred to another chamber due to a large number of pending cases. The decision to delay proceedings a second time comes pending a ruling on an appeal by Shell set for 12 June concerning the legality of a decision regarding its defendants. In court Monday, the judge said that it would be prudent to await the outcome of the ruling before launching the corruption trial.
Eddie Maika Jr. presented that report, and I'm pretty sure that the people of Nigeria are very eager to know the outcome of this ruling, which has kept on being postponed every now and then.
Absolutely, and we've got lots of comments on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and Abdul Rahim Osman says, thanks God, now the civilized Western nations are doing the right thing by fighting corruption in Africa. It's a win-win situation for everyone and every nation involved, because corruption is killing Africa.
Well, the case of Shell, and I mean the case of not only Shell but majority of oil companies, and it goes beyond corruption. Of course, we know that in the Niger Delta there are also issues to do with environment and pollution of the water and the environment that people are living in. And probably this is just one of the beginning if finally something good comes out of that.
Absolutely, Jane. And we have another one here from Enunja Obina. And he says, I hope the Nigerian government in power at the moment, they are following what's going on in Italy.
Well, the Nigerian government is something of debate for the people of Nigeria. As for us, we shall just continue covering and keeping you updated. Keep it up to Africa Link, and we shall certainly read your conversation, your comments, your opinion.
If you're just joining us, welcome to the program. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
Still to come, we shall be hearing why more and more Kenyan women are opting for cesarean birth to normal delivery.
When I was pregnant, I just had fear. I've always feared just pain. Anything painful, I don't like.
Interesting. Women fear pain. That is something new to me. Well, we shall also have some sports coming your way, and this time round featuring Sierra Leone's Premier League. Stay tuned. Now, 53 years after independence, Gambians on Saturday elected the first female mayor for the capital, Banjul. Rohi Malek Lowi, whose father was a mayor of Banjul during the First Republic, defeated 8 candidates to emerge the winner of a highly contested election. Omar Wali reports from Banjul.
In a country where women are considered backbenchers in politics, the newfound freedom has changed that perception. Gambian women are not only actively involved in the voting process but running for the highest office. Politics might not be something new to the newly elected mayor, as her father himself won, but she will have to deal with many challenges facing the city of Banjul. There is a shortage of water and electricity supply, and the infrastructure within the city needs to be addressed. What are the voters expecting, and will she deliver? This is the question I put to come folks.
It's a good move for the first time in the history of Banjul to have a female mayor been elected. She has a big task to do. There are immediate needs to me that Banjul need to, the mayor or the BCC need to look into. That is the road. Their feeder roads are not in a very good condition. As a capital, definitely, you should not have those kind of feeder roads around Banjul. And also the drainage system. I think the drainage system need to be looked into, because if you look at during the rainy season, Banjulians have always encountered serious problems when it comes to flood.
Banjul people are not with her, because if you see the statistics, 10,000 people have voted. And then she only came out 2,837. So that's a poor percentage for her. So which means that Banjul people are not with her. Well, I don't think that she can do anything for Banjul. I don't think she can do anything for Banjul, because yesterday I had an interview with her on GRTS. She was saying that her first priority is to make up the market. Whereas the first priority of Banjul is the drainage and then the sewage.
My fear is we never elected a female mayor. That's my problem. And I don't know where we're heading to. That's my fear.
We want good roads, yeah, and try to make Banjul clean, yeah. We wish her everything and all the best, yeah, because this is the first time to have a female mayoress.
That put aside law, will have to work hard to unite Banjulians, who are mostly voted along ethnic lines.
Omar Wale in Banjul sent us that report. And as someone who was once in Banjul, I did enjoy the city, Jane, I must tell you. It's a little pretty city, but also as a woman, I can only congratulate the winner and wish her all the best.
Absolutely. And Jane, history has been made. The Gambia has elected its first female mayor of the capital, Banjul. She defeated 8 other candidates in the race. Many are proud of her because she represents a growing number of empowered women of the continent. Now, on our Facebook page, DW Africa, we posted the question, what's your message for the newest mayor of female mayor in Africa?
Some interesting comments coming in there. Mia Lee says, I wish she could be my wife. Okay, that's an interesting one.
Absolutely.
Took me by surprise. And Aliyu says, I don't think it was a good development for the people of Banjul, but let's see how it goes.
And we have this one from Sani. He says, congratulations to her. May God grant her the strength and wisdom to lead.
Jallow says she won with 26% of votes, while 74 went to other 8 candidates. And he leaves it at that, question of suspense. But never mind, she did win. That's what matters. And she has been given an opportunity to serve. It's only time to prove her. And the people of Gambia, or rather Banjul, will be the ones to judge her, but not
yes,
us.
Yes, indeed. And Nyamba says African women who are not yet corrupted with Western liberalization are good managers. Wishing her all the best.
Health check.
Now, to push or not to push? This is the question most expectant Kenyan women are grappling with when carrying their baby to term. Over the last 2 years, the number of women who are just too push to push is on the rise, with health experts warning of long-term risks involved with the surgical procedure.
Indeed, Kenya's National Health Insurance provider has noted an increase in requests made by women who do not wish to undergo a normal delivery because they do not want to experience pain. Our Nairobi correspondent Rhoda Odhiambo spoke to two women who were wheeled into the theatre, with one of them wishing she never went through it.
As more expectant mothers get closer to their due date, some are just too posh to push. 25-year-old Vivian Muganda is one of them. Vivian says she did not opt for a normal delivery because she feared the unknown pain that comes with pushing the baby. She settled for a cesarean section when she was just 7 months pregnant.
When I was pregnant, I just had fear. I've always feared just pain. Anything painful, I don't like. I was being told by my friends, people who I consulted, that the labor pain was very painful, and I just had to talk to my guy now whether I could go for a CS willingly. I had my facts right, and my doctor told me you can always opt for it if you don't really want to go push.
The mother of one says she also got counseled on what she is likely to face after the procedure, and to date she has never had any complication. Unlike Vivian, who did not think twice about having a normal delivery, 35-year-old Lucy Kariuki's dream was to have the same experience as her mum when she gave birth to her. Unfortunately, this will remain nothing but a dream after she underwent 2 cesarean sections.
After 9 months elapsed, I went to hospital. I had to be induced because labor didn't start like normal. And after 18 hours of labor, I was told, we have to take you to theater. And the reason they gave is obstructed labor, which simply means that contractions are progressing well and normal, but the baby can't exit through the pelvis. Like, my pelvic bone is small for baby's passage.
After her first surgery, Lucy tells me that she did not have any complications. However, 5 years later, when she gave birth to her second child, that is when things became worse. Before delivery, she asked to be given the option to push in what doctors call a vaginal birth after cesarean sections, commonly known as VBAC, but that was not possible because of the 100 days doctor strike that happened last year.
With the second pregnancy, no doctor was willing to give me that chance to push. However, I went back to the hospital. I got my firstborn. The doctor was willing for me to try VBAC, but that was the time the doctors were striking. And she told me, I could give you that chance, but it's not worth it. One, because she doesn't have time to monitor me. They are handling so many emergencies at that period of time. For the second reason is, if the first reason was obstructed labor, there is no miracle to make the pelvic bone expand.
Not only does she have to live with her quashed dreams, she's also trying to cope with excruciating back pains that are as a result of these surgeries. According to the World Health Organization, C-sections have become a common surgery not only in Kenya, but globally, adding that it is increasingly being used when it is unnecessary despite being costly. Obstetrician gynecologist Sami Kulova says women should only opt for this procedure only when necessary.
When a patient has declined to understand the safety net that the doctor is trying to provide for her to undergo a cesarean section, despite having discussed the risks, benefits, and alternatives, then it becomes a cesarean section on request. It's a patient who has requested for it. That is really the indication.
Medical guidelines state that C-sections are only done when the life of the mother and the baby are in danger. Some of the risks associated with cesarean births include infections on the scarred area, loss of blood, with long-term risks being back pains and formation of clots on the legs.
Rhoda Odhiambo there for us in Nairobi, Kenya.
And of course, the question is, now what? To push or not to push? That's something that you have been discussing. Edris says push, and he or she did write it in capital letters. She goes for a push.
And Jadida J.E. says the doctors and nurses are forcing pregnant women to undergo CS so as to make fast money. Pushing to Kenyan doctors is time-consuming. It's sad.
And Maya from Cameroon says the natural way of delivery is the best, ordained by God. Operations should only be in some time of hard labor. That is an unfortunate situation for the women.
And John, he's in Uganda, says push is the natural process of birth unless recommended by a doctor. Push for me.
And again, Mbazira, also from Uganda, says it's the same here in Uganda. Ladies make appointment for operation instead of pushing. Operation is risky, although many of them find it a better option. They really do not want to push.
Thanks.
Interesting conversation that absolutely. You can still continue to participate and join and contribute and share your opinion by visiting our page DW Africa. Now, Sierra Leone's Premier League will be back in action this year after 4 years of non-action. Sports Minister Ibrahim Nyalenke made the announcement and gave a 90-day timeline for the football fixture to commence. Sierra Leone's Premier was suspended 4 years ago following the outbreak of Ebola.
And as Claudia Anthony found out, the announcement brought joy among football fans, and the players are already in action training.
This is Parade Grounds, a football field in Central Freetown. There are about 50 young men practicing football. A few days back, the new administration announced that football must resume in Sierra Leone. The young men here are really having fun practicing football.
Some are jogging on the pitch. It's a very dusty pitch, and with every kick of the ball, it raises dust in the air. It is under these circumstances that many of these young men went up to the Premier League. One of the players here is Tiliki Kagu, who dreams to play for Manchester United. He's excited about the return of the Premier League to his country and also dreams of becoming Sierra Leone's Ronaldo.
I want to be like King Ronaldo in Brazil. That's why I train heavily hard, of course.
How old are you?
I'm in seniors right now.
You're 18. Yeah. Do you go to school?
Yeah.
You go to school?
Yeah.
And your aim is to go international?
Yeah.
Which team would you like to play for?
Oh, like for me, I want to play for the Manchester United.
High ambitions indeed. Alusain Kagwo is one of the coaches of local teams in the area and sounds very pleased that the return of the Premier League will boost the capacity and subsequent exposure of his team.
Hey, that's a very good news. I think we're all happy about that because this is our dream. We want to see football play in our country. As a young coach, I'm happy about that because I'm dealing with the young boys and I have so many boys I'm now fit to play in the Premier League. But there's no way I can market my players because the league is not playing in our country.
Claudia Anthony presented that report that brings a bit of new good news and relief for football fans in there.
Yes, indeed. We call it football made in Sierra Leone.
Yes. Interesting.
Now, on our Facebook page, we posted also another story, and it's about Cameroon. And because of poverty and Boko Haram, girls from 10 to 16 years are selling sex to survive, according to a report by Reuters Foundation. So the question was, is Paul Biya's government doing enough to improve the plight of Cameroonians living in poverty?
And Arnold Epati says in the past 35 years, Paul Biya's administration has made Cameroonians even poorer.
And we have this one from Kajina. Biya says bad governance policies have put Cameroon where it is today. Biya has failed Cameroonians.
And Jato says even in Yaoundé, the capital, what's going on there is far, just like it is in the north. That's all we had time for. Thank you for listening to us. My name is Jane Ayeko Kimet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge.